Welcome to the Magic and Alchemy Podcast, where we talk about witchcraft, setting intentions, forgotten folklore, and mythology. Created by Tamed Wild, Magic and Alchemy is a collection of stories, rituals, and articles crafted by a variety of creators and writers, including myself, Kate Ballou, and my co-host, Kristen Lisenby.
Hello, and welcome back to the Magic and Alchemy Podcast. I'm Kristen Lisenby.
And I'm Kate Ballou.
Happy Astara, Kate. We can finally say it. It's spring. Also, happy Mercury Day. We're going to be talking a lot about this deity, archetype, planet today, and it's long overdue.
I'm excited. Happy spring equinox, Kristen, listeners. Happy astrological new year. Happy spring. Happy Aries season. Happy it's time to get our lives together. Winter is over. I feel like I've been like talking for the last couple of months to people at like parties being like, it's okay. You don't have to start things yet. And they're like talking about the new year's resolution. I'm like, don't let capitalism fool you.
Nope.
But now we have no excuse, so it's time to get going. Following the lessons of the flowers, all the things. But I'm so excited. I can't wait to discuss psychopomps, tricksters, messengers, and guides today. But before we dive in, Kristen, what listener question do we have?
Well, Mercury is retrograde from April 1st until April 24th, a time of this deity. And it also coincides with April Fools. So today, our listener question is about working with retrogrades and what can we leave Mercury as an offering during the retrograde season?
I love that. What are you thinking?
Well, my advice for retrogrades is always, always awareness, because as much as I would love to think I can plan my entire life around what's happening in the cosmos, it's just not realistic. And when it comes to Mercury retrograde, I, of course, think about Mercury, the god. And one of the masks he wears is that of the trickster, of course, which we're going to be talking about in a little bit. But a trickster who is incredibly wise and eloquent and charming and swift. And so outsmarting him or trying to control him is not likely. So Kate, I need to hear your thoughts about this, but when it comes to offerings for the spirit of Mercury, I do have thoughts because, I did a big deep dive on Mercury for today's episode. So gifts from Mercury are often said to be chance happenings, happy surprises, synchronicities. And so I think leaving him some of your chance findings is a sweet way to gain favor. So think, you know, coins you found on the street, curious pebbles that caught your attention, a relic or photograph or memento you thought was lost forever, but you found in an old coat pocket. Mercury is said to speak through the wind. So when the wind changes direction, seemingly magically, that's Mercury. So maybe speak a spell into the wind, or if you're skilled with any wind instruments, play him a song as an offering. And of course, as the patron saint of many writers, dedicating a piece of writing or poetry to Mercury during a retrograde could also make a really beautiful offering. But what do you think, Kate?
As always, I love all of those ideas, especially thinking about awareness. I know that we talked about this a little bit in our last episode with Shelby Bundy about eclipse season and retrogrades and kind of just like bringing awareness to kind of work with and surrender to those energies and fight against them, like you said. But Yeah, in the spirit of Mercury, your words are an offering. So you can write a prayer, a dedication, an invocation, you know, show that you're paying attention. I think Mercury loves creativity, so get creative with it. Like you said, I mean, sharing a memento lost in a old coat pocket is such a good idea. But yeah, as you, and I mean, listeners, like as you listen to Kristen speak about this divine psychopomp, like what associations do you make? Do you connect? You know, I think a simple offering of a coin on an altar is always welcome too. You know, he is a god related to commerce. But as always, Kristen and I are always just going to tell you to use your intuition and to be authentically you. Speaking on behalf of you, Kristen, here. But that's the best magic there is.
Yes, and so it is.
Well, I'm really excited about today's conversation because in the spirit of the topsy-turvy, the retrogrades, the fools, the spring, the beginnings, we're talking tricksters.
Yes, and it feels so right. I will be talking about the god Mercury, as we mentioned, because somehow in four seasons, we have yet to have an episode dedicated to this archetype. Although I know we've mentioned him many, many times before. Listeners, I'm sure you've noticed, but each episode of Magic and Alchemy comes out on a Wednesday. And this is no accident. Kate and I scheduled it according to the rules of planetary magic that suggests Wednesday is Mercury's day. Mercury is a planet. It's a metal, a mythical character, an archetype that rules the realm of communication. He is part liminal traveler, part psychopomp, eloquent writer and speaker and storyteller, but he's also a trickster. And so as we sit in the shadow of April Fool's Day, we thought we'd welcome some of our favorite tricksters to today's circle.
We talked about Hermes in our Planetary Magic episode, episode 111 with Shelby Bundy. If you want to continue the planetary magic after this episode, listeners. And today I'll be talking about the more than human world, fur, feathers, fins, trickster characters, messengers, and guides from our animal kin.
Night sky, Mercury is the first planet from our sun. It is the smallest planet in our solar system, with the exception of dwarf planet Pluto. Astrologically, Mercury describes our communication style, our voice, how we express our ideas and receive information. If your ascendant or rising sign is Gemini or Virgo, Mercury is your chart ruler. Mercury, the planet, is associated with the chemical element mercury, which was historically called quicksilver, a powerful agent of transformation. At room temperature, mercury is liquid metal. It's silver, mirrored, fluid, and unequivocally lunar. Both Mercury, the planet, and Mercury, the element, were named after the mythical Roman god by the same name, a character who is curious and quick, mercurial, unpredictable. When it comes to animals, Mercury is represented by the serpent and the quick-footed, clever, hard-to-pin-down hare. The Gnostics believe that Mercury's Greek counterpart, Hermes, was a personification of the serpent coiled around the world egg. In this form, he was the Ouroboros, the ruler of time who embodied the entirety of Earth and also the cosmos. As a divine shepherd, Mercury and or Hermes is also associated with dogs and livestock, but specifically herding animals like goats, cows, and sheep. Additionally, Mercury is linked with the ram, as we see in Concerning Astronomy, a document from the 2nd century AD that says, quote, Mercury is placed above the head of Aries, the ram, so that the dimness of Aries might be marked by its brightness. A mosaic from the 3rd century personifies Wednesday, the day of the week known as Mercury's Day, by depicting the god riding atop a golden ram. He wears a winged hat and holds a long staff or wand in one of his hands. In our gardens, we might see Mercury's face in the petals of crocus flowers, peppermint leaves, valerian root, honeysuckle, palm, and many of the magically potent and poisonous plants like mandrake. And although I have nothing to back this up, I suspect that Mercury is a land tender, or at least has some knowledge of plant medicine, because in stories, he knows enough about enchanted, protective, yet unnamed herbs that he prescribes them to travelers. In one story, he does this to protect some travelers from Circe and her spells of transformation. Pivoting to his Greek family tree for a moment, where Mercury is Hermes, this god is the son of Zeus and Maia, a nymph, but also the eldest of the Pleiades, some say. His grandparents are Cronus and Rhea, and Atlas and Pleione. Hermes has many famous siblings and half-siblings like Apollo and Artemis, Persephone, Dionysus, and Ares. Hermes was bisexual and had many lovers, like Aphrodite, many, many nymphs, Persephone, Clytie, Penelope, Crocus, and Perseus. Hecate was also believed to be Hermes' lover, and like her, Hermes was often depicted as triform and a crossroads spirit, although in his case, it was the four-way crossroads he was most fond of. Hermes had many children, like Evander, Hermaphroditus, and Pan, who he dedicated a conversation to in episode 107, Satyrs and Centaurs. Hermes has at least 16 other children, whose names I will not attempt, but they are easy to find online if any listeners are curious. As the mythical traveler and messenger, Hermes' most famous tools, in my opinion, were his winged sandals, which he lent to Perseus when he slew Medusa. These sandals were golden and allowed him to fly, to move between worlds with ease and swiftly. Unbothered by distance or death, Hermes served as a guide to and from the underworld. If we remember the story of Persephone's descent and return from the below, we'll remember Zeus sent Hermes to retrieve the maiden and guide her back to the land of light. The road to the underworld is treacherous, impossible to make without a guide or divine intervention, but Hermes is a psychopomp, sometimes called the conductor of souls, and he oversaw all roads, no matter where they started and no matter their destination. In fact, Hermes was so good at his job that he met Dionysus in his mother's dying body and delivered him into Zeus's thigh so he could be reborn. In addition to his golden sandals, Hermes also has the golden touch, thanks to his wand or staff upon which serpents are coiled. In some depictions, the staff is adorned with ribbon, not serpents, but allegedly, whatever Hermes' wand touched was transformed into this precious metal. Hermes' golden touch was possibly a nod to his relationship with his father, the solar god Zeus, or to the sun god Apollo, who supposedly gifted Hermes the staff. His golden touch is likely the reason Hermes was the patron saint of alchemists. In tarot, the magician card is said to be Hermes. Hermes was also a wordsmith, which is why writers and poets will light a candle for him when engaged in their craft. In ancient Egypt, Hermes was associated with Thoth, who was credited with blessing humans with language. So in Greek myth, Hermes helped the Fates create the alphabet. Hermes evolved through the Middle Ages as Hermes Trismegistus, Hermes Thrice Great, and became the founder of Hermetic magic, which includes practices based on his writings related to astrology and alchemy, mysticism, and various philosophies. In his book, Leaving the Body, Scott Rogo explains that, according to the teaching of Hermes Trismegistus, Hermeticism contended that thoughts contained physical properties, and that by manipulating them, one could control the world. It was also believed that spiritual development was inherently related to mental imagery and the uses one could make of it. We talked a bit about Hermes Trismegistus in our episode 29, As Above, So Below, but this spirit was known as the scribe of Saturn, the counselor of Osiris, and the promoter of good. It's said that when he finally ascended to heaven, Hermes took the shape of Sirius, the great dog star. In the book Isis, the Eternal Goddess of Egypt and Rome, author Leslie Jackson writes that, quote, "The star Sirius is in the constellation of Canis Major, the great dog, and is also referred to as the dog star. It is the brightest star in the sky, but more importantly to the Egyptians, its heliacal rising coincided with the start of the inundation. A heliacal rising is when the star reappears in the east just before sunrise after being invisible for a period. In Egypt, in 3000 BCE, this occurred at the summer solstice. Now it's about 6 weeks later. At the same time that the dog star rises, the Nile also, in a sense, rises, coming up to water the land of Egypt. The reappearance of Sirius brought the hot dog days of summer. From the earliest times, the new year was considered to start with the inundation because it was so critical to the country." End quote. In the Iliad, Homer writes, "Sirius rises late in the dark liquid sky. On summer nights, star of stars. Orion's dog, they call it, brightest of all. But an evil portent bringing heat and fevers to suffering humanity." And while I know Homer here is referring to Sirius the star and its connection to heat and the dog days of summer, as I mentioned, I also think it speaks to sort of the trickster side of Hermes, the god supposedly responsible for the star. Now, Mercury has always been a trickster from the time he was born, and maybe it's his youthful appearance that ties him to this playfulness or immaturity. I wrote a retelling about one of his myths when Hermes steals Apollo's cows that you can find on the Tamed Wild blog, but it goes a little something like this. Young Hermes wakes up from a nap. And he's hungry, like really hungry. So he asks his grumbling stomach what it craves, and it responds, steak. And so because a divine child needs a divine meal, instead of hassling the cook for some leftovers, Hermes walks out the door and heads toward the Thessalian pastures. In his head, the plan sounds simple. Locate the 50 head of cattle owned by Apollo, and then borrow a few. Hermes figures that he'll harvest two cows, have a nice meal, and Apollo will be none the wiser. But after eating the first cow, Hermes comes up with an even better plan. Instead of stealing two cows, why not take the entire herd? Now, Hermes has no intention of eating all 50 cows. He just wants to hide them for fun. Hermes knows Apollo will try to find his cows by following their tracks, so he fastens himself a pair of common wicker sandals and leads the cows into the mountains backwards. It's true that nobody knows how Hermes managed to drive 50 cows up a mountain backwards, but that's not the point. With the cows out of sight, Hermes returns home, he hops back in his crib, and he goes to sleep. The very next morning, as Apollo begins his journey across the sky, he spots his empty fields and looks everywhere for his beloved heifers. To Hermes' delight, the backward tracks worked. But because Apollo was the literal sun and god of prophecy, he saw everything. Child or not, Apollo knew Hermes was guilty. He dragged the boy to Mount Olympus to face Zeus's wrath, but Zeus just laughed. The god of gods wasn't the least bit angry. He thought the whole thing was quite amusing. He was so delighted by Hermes' ability to fool the sun that he offered him a seat on Mount Olympus. He then requested Hermes return Apollo's cattle, which he did, and to smooth things over with his half-brother, Hermes gifted Apollo his lyre. As a trickster, Hermes throws the wool over our eyes. He reminds us to question what we see, hear, and, quote, know to be true. He tests us. Being the patron of tricksters is not a negative trait, per se, because the way Hermes sees it, he's just the messenger. But Mercury was not only a trickster and a prankster. He was sometimes described as a god of thieves. And nowhere is this more evident than within the pages of Aesop's fables. In these stories, Hermes steals cattle from blind men. He packs up a wagon of lies and deceit and travels around the world, passing out these wares to anyone he meets. He dresses up as a mortal to hear what others think about him, which Kate really reminds me of the myth of Athena and Arachne here, Arachne. But he also seeks revenge against people who don't hold up to the promises they made to him by deserting them when they're in perilous situations. Sometimes Hermes does this trickery and thievery of his own free will, but many times Zeus instructs him to do these unsavory things because, remember, Mercury, Hermes, is the messenger for the gods. And this, of course, makes me think of the old idiom, don't shoot the messenger, which ironically, according to grammarist.com, has roots in ancient Greece and the words of Sophocles, who around 440 BC said, "For no man delights in the bearer of bad news." So we know that Mercury has many beneficial qualities that I mentioned in the beginning of this conversation today. But when it comes to his trickster element, where is the magic in that? Well, the scholar Lewis Hyde describes the trickster and this archetype as a boundary crosser, which feels really spot on to me. And I would maybe go a bit further and say that the trickster is a boundary breaker. When he appears, he pushes people outside of their comfort zones, forcing them to reconsider why they established a line or a boundary there in the first place. In fairy tales and myth, a trickster drives the story. He texturizes the plot. The trickster is unable to be controlled or contained. They are independent, a free spirit, but one who is incredibly wise. He seems to connect the conscious, what's right in front of us, and the unconscious, or what pops out from the shadows to frighten us or to derail us. The trickster is playful, reminding us that all work and no play creates dullness, and this rigid demeanor does not beget creativity. The element Mercury is a dissolving agent, so strong that it dissolves gold. Like his element, Mercury also helps to disintegrate what might initially be seen as precious, material things or ego, routine, whatever habits and pieces of our identity we've been clinging to for just a bit too long. Hermes loves masks. He revels in a good disguise, but he also reminds us to not get too attached to any of these personas. We are more than our jobs and our titles and the skin that we decide to put on each day. In her book, Goddesses and Every Woman, Dr. Jean Bolen says that Hermes is the spirit that sets the soul on fire. In this context, Hermes is like the wind that blows over smoldering coals at the center of a hearth, causing them to blaze up. In the same way, ideas can ignite deep feelings or words can make conscious what has so far been inarticulately known, illuminating what, until now, has only been dimly perceived.
Are you a word witch? It's Kate here, and if you're a book lover, a spellcaster of language, or a lover of the written word, Tamed Wild's digital subscription on Instagram has a book coven, and we're excited to invite you to join the circle. Each month, Danielle leads book discussions, and the Tamed Wild team shares reels about plant magic, astrology, and tarot. This digital subscription is a coven for the solo practitioner looking to join in with like-minded, earth-spirited souls through the portal of Instagram. To learn more, visit @tamedwild on Instagram and subscribe while on mobile. Okay, now back to the show. When we decided to discuss tricksters in this episode, I knew that I had to turn to our more than human friends, our kin in the wild, of the trees, forests, rivers, oceans, skies, and mountains, especially with today's equinox. The animals here in the Northern Hemisphere again venture out, blossoming alongside Mother Nature. The home of these beings is a place of initiation. And as I say these words, I just heard a hawk outside my window. Oh my gosh, magic. Hi. In the words of one of our favorites, Dr. Clarissa Pinkola Estes, go out into the woods, go out. If you don't go out in the woods, nothing will ever happen and your life will never begin. In Animal Spirits, Kim Kranz writes, since the beginning of time, animals have played an integral role in the story of humanity. In creation myths, far and wide, you will find complex and transformative relationships between creatures and humans. Let your mind go back, way back to simpler times and ancient civilizations where half man, half beast roamed the earth. Serpents in trees tempted humans with fruit, sirens sang along the water's edge, ravens delivered messages, and fish whispered prophecies. Then let the countless paintings covering cave walls in Lascaux, France, and throughout Europe take you back over 17,000 years. And what are our civilization's first paintings of? Creatures and humans. The word trickster dates back to the early 15th century, a cheat, a mean ruse, from the French trick, deceit, treachery, cheating, which came from the Latin meaning to be evasive, to shuffle, nonsense, a tangle of difficulties. I especially love that part, a tangle of difficulties. And of course, there are many names and languages for these tricksters and teachers. They are fluid. They call many places home. As a child, my parents read me stories of Coyote, a trickster character of the indigenous peoples of the southwest part of North America. In these tales, Coyote is the chief animal in the age before humans. Passed on orally, these stories depict this wily creature as the one who arranged for humans to have fire and daylight, the one who originated the arts, and as one who is working the puppet strings, knowingly behind situations, a being of fate. Nadira Mitchell, a Navajo Diné writer on Plant Forward, writes, "The coyote is the trickster because he embodies chaos to teach us what is wrong in our society. Coyote plays an integral role in our Diné creation story when the coyote's foolishness helps form the world as we know it. Our world is not perfect, and coyote is a symbol that teaches us this. Without the trickster, there would be no sense of balance or hozho in Navajo. Hozho is an integral part of Navajo culture. To me, it is to live in harmony with yourself and the natural world. You cannot have hozho if you do not understand what the opposite of hozho is. That is why the coyote is important. He embodies characteristics we should not follow." End quote. The Northwest Indigenous peoples have Raven. From Alaska to British Columbia, this trickster takes to the skies with jet black feathers and guides humans by transcending social norms and order. Trickster characters know that a bit of chaos can bring a lot of magic. From the Canadian Museum of History, one of the best known of these stories tells how Raven disguised himself in order to enter the house of the Sky Chief, from whom he stole the sun, moon, and stars to give to humankind. In another popular tale, the raven was hungry, so he decided to swim underwater to eat the bait off the hooks of some halibut fishermen. However, the hook lodged solidly in his beak. The fishermen banded together to haul up what they thought was a huge halibut, but got the raven's beak instead, end quote. In other areas, there is mink, there is blue jay, hare, spider, crow, or fox, in addition to raven and coyote, as the heroes of similar trickster tales. In episode 72, Maybon Magic, I briefly discussed the trickster character and spider Anansi from West Africa, if you want to weave with the threads of the trickster tales of spider. In Aboriginal and Australian storytelling, the crow is a trickster. In Crow Tarot, M.J. Cullinay writes, "Crows have always held a special place in my heart. I cannot pinpoint when or why it started, but for as long as I can remember, since I was a little girl, they have fascinated me. It may be because when I look into their eyes, I get a distinct feeling that they know something, so much more significant than I could ever comprehend, something otherworldly." Much like Mercury, animals are messengers. They are guides. They are the psychopomps, travelers from the other world. And sometimes they are deities in disguise. They are shapeshifters made of that same mercurial quicksilver as the god himself. And this has been true for people and cultures in all corners of our planet. In Of Oak, Ash, and Thorn by DJ Conway, she writes, "The Scottish Highland has a long history of shape-shifting enchantresses who could take on the forms of deer. Some scholars think that this illusion was created by priestesses wearing the skins of deer, then suddenly discarding them to be seen in their human shape. A close study of ancient literature points to a more complicated background to shapeshifting than this. The shapeshifted forms held even at close range. A deer skin would not hold an illusion close up. There's always been something ethereal about these beings. I remember in our conversation with Perdita Finn, we discussed how the natural world that we're all connected to works like an oracle. If you look outside, who do you receive messages from?" And I love that so, so much. You know, deer have always been messengers in this way for me. These tricksters, these storytellers, they remind us that we're not separate. In the words of Donna Haraway, "If I have a dog, my dog has a human." In Maya Toll's Bestiary, Maya writes, "Working with animal medicine is about opening your mind and heart to the energies animals hold in the world, and then gently asking what they have to teach you. We share this world with so many creatures, each holding a place not only in the physical world, but also in the ecosystem of spirit. When we talk about habitat loss and animal extinction, I can't help but wonder what energies the world will lose when a particular species passes from this earth. If they are gone in physical form, will we remember the far-sightedness of eagle and the deep understanding of dolphin?" End quote. Wherever you live, no matter who your ancestors are, they had trickster characters, animal guides, and beloved more than human kin. Consider this an invitation this spring to follow their tricks and tales back into history to see what or who you might find. This is an urging to care for these beings, to protect them and honor them. When you look outside your window as this episode ends, does a guide wait to greet you? The world is an oracle, and our kin long for us to say hello.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Magic and Alchemy, a podcast from Tamed Wild. Again, we're Kristen Lisenby and Kate Ballou. You can find us online at Easton Alchemy and at K8Ballou. Send us all of your questions and comments or just say hello via email at podcast@tamedwild.com. You can view all the amazing offerings from Tamed Wild on their Instagram at Tamed Wild or on the blog tamedwild.com.
Join us back here in 2 weeks for another magical conversation. Just a reminder that magic and alchemy are always available to those who know where to look for it. So mote it be or something better. Until next time.